This is The Source on Texas Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. It's now easier than ever to cross items off that Christmas shopping list. You just go online. Online retailers are a convenient way to beat the crowds. But does shopping on the web expose shoppers to certain risks? Phishing scams, identity theft, and privacy breaches are now commonplace with real-life consequences and cost. Last year in Texas, an estimated $77 million was lost to internet criminals, according to an FBI report released earlier this year. What kind of cyber attacks are most common? And in what way are hackers targeting consumers' online information? How can you protect yourself? What makes personal accounts vulnerable? And what steps can be taken to protect and prevent data breaches and data theft? Yeah, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Do you have questions and comments, a story to tell us about your identity being stolen or some sort of cyber theft that's happened to you? 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Our guest this afternoon, we're joined by Princess Young. She's with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Office of Cybersecurity and Communications. Sean McCleskey is a retired Secret Service agent, and he is with the University of Texas at Austin's Center for Identity. Samantha Ellinger is a technology reporter for the San Antonio Express News. It's great to have you three here this afternoon. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So let me go around the horn here and get a response from each of you on this. And I'll start off with Princess Young. Really, how vulnerable are consumers? I mean, how really big of a threat is this?
Sure. As one of my old bosses used to say, and again, thank you for having me on today, so close to the holidays as well. But as my one of my old supervisors used to say, if you can't eat it, there's probably a computer in it. And I think we just are constantly moving more and more toward such a reliance on a lot of this technology. And so, unfortunately, with a lot of that reliance and convenience that technology brings, that opportunity to bring people together, share information across the country and across the globe, we also kind of open ourselves up for some vulnerabilities. And that's not to say, the technology shouldn't be used. I think that there are amazing things that technology is doing in healthcare, transportation, in the home, et cetera. But to your point, I just think, consumers are vulnerable just like anybody else, just like a business. And so we have to kind of treat our technology as our kind of our gems and our jewels.
And Sean McCleskey, how vulnerable, how important should consumers be treating this?
Well, particularly during the holidays, people are trying to do a lot of things very quickly. And so they're wanting a lot of ease, and they are wanting, they have a lot of things to buy. And so sometimes that's kind of when, I see people letting their guard down. And, criminals are very aware of this, and they know that people are trying to do this, trying to do it fast. And I think particularly during this time, I think people are generally vulnerable. But during this time, that's when I see a lot of these scams when I was at Secret Service really start to hit during this time.
Samantha Ellinger at the Express News.
So I spoke with security researchers at Carbon Black, and it's a Massachusetts security firm. They found that attempted cyber attacks on organizations rose 20% between November and December of last year. So we're going to be predictably seeing more of these attacks around the holidays, and it's a time when I think, like people have already said, people's guards down, they're trying to get things done really quickly, and the big thing is to think before you click. And so the most popular way for criminals to attack users through malicious attachments and emails. So if an email doesn't have attachments, they also might try to get you to click on a link in the email, which will take you to similar bad content hosted online. That's according to a senior threat researcher at Carbon Black. So I guess the big thing here is just look for these things that are going to be focused on the holidays or trying to get you to do some kind of deal around the holidays. So.
Right. One of the warnings I read online is about these digital greeting cards that it's popping up on me on social media and also in my email inbox, these electronic Christmas cards. It seems very innocent and benign, but some of these could have a nefarious purpose behind them. Is that right, Princess Young?
Yes, unfortunately. Cybercriminals love to mimic things that are otherwise legitimate. And so they like to, you know, put malware and other malicious types of software, including ransomware, that are right behind that click of the button. And to Sam's point and also to Sean's point, everyone is such in a rush during the holidays, trying to get your shopping done, trying to get out the door, trying to make food, trying to host everyone, that you are constantly going through your emails or going through your news feeds and your posts. You see something that says click here to view more information, or Johnny sent you a Christmas card, click here. And so you're not really thinking through all of those decisions. You're not kind of stopping and thinking before you make those decisions. And so unfortunately, criminals love to use otherwise what would be seemingly legitimate emails. Not to say that they're not, but you do have to take a stop and make that educated decision before we just kind of click. We get to be very click happy, I think, especially during the holidays, and cyber criminals love that. So looking at things like, does this email address seem legitimate? You know, it says it's from my mom, but does my mom normally talk this way? There's a lot of spelling errors. I don't think so. And, you know, when in doubt, throw it out or call that person or text that person and just double check. Hey, did you send me a note? And that will help. Honestly, that will help circumvent a lot of these threats that we see during the holiday.
Sean McCleskey, so I get this thing in my email says, hey, a Christmas card from Uncle Joe. And I don't even have an Uncle Joe, but, you know, but there is one here. And what should I do and what's the harm?
Well, typically what amazes me is that curiosity is sometimes our worst enemy. Is that people, they look at it and they just become very curious about it. Ultimately, click on it, and then that's when our problem starts. So just like some of the other panelists said, you know, we really got to, and one of the things we try to do is when we go out and speak at Secret Service and, you know, try to provide information to the public of saying, hey, look, you know, if you don't recognize it, don't open it. You know, what's the harm in it? Are you really going to miss something? You know, particularly if it's from an institution that you may or may not recognize, if it is from one you recognize, you know, I'm very wary. Even if I get things from my own bank, I typically, particularly if it's asking for information, I always will call my local branch and say, hey, are y'all aware of this? Have you sent this out? And in fact, I had one not too long ago, which was a phishing attack. And they said, nope, thank you for calling us. If you will, you know, we have an address, you can, you know, give us the URL address on it and so forth. So I think it's, again, it's really slowing down and recognizing that what you're handing out is very valuable. This is your information. I mean, a lot of people won't hand somebody $20, but it amazes me how fast they will hand over all their data, which is really, you know, it's got a lot of value in today's economy, and hand it over so readily and so fast. It's absolutely amazing to me how quick that will happen.
If you got a question or a comment about cybersecurity in the shopping season, people are right now, that last rush to get Christmas done, maybe you might make a couple extra clicks that you shouldn't. Got a question, a comment, a story to tell us, we want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. We've got some experts here, 210-614-8980. Let's get smart about online shopping on The Source. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're talking about your cybersecurity, some things that you can do to improve your protection, become less vulnerable as you go online. And we just talked about some of these Christmas cards people send through, or maybe they're not even people. There could be bots or it could be hackers of some sort from around the world sending out these Christmas cards online. You hit click and suddenly now your computer's been compromised, your information's been compromised, maybe you'll get hit by malware. Lesson is, don't click on those things that you don't know what they are, where they came from. They may have even kidnapped your friend's or relative's computer to send that to you. You're probably better off just not clicking on it at all. And moving forward with some other things that are happening in our world that we should get more educated about. Samantha Ellinger, technology reporter for the San Antonio Express News, as I was doing research for today's conversation, I saw this one tip that someone had online saying, go to this website. It's called haveibeenpawned.com and type in your email address, and it will tell you whether or not you have been hacked. And to me, that seemed like what a perfect scheme that a hacker would set up in order to get my email address and to see if I was a knucklehead or not. I mean, what should I think about something like this?
Haveibeenpwned.com, as far as I understand, is a legitimate way to check. There are also something that I think is really useful. There are publish every so often, security firms will publish a list of common passwords that have been hacked or that hackers try first. Like if they're trying to hack into your account, they'll run through a list of like commonly used passwords. And that's another thing I would highly recommend checking is, you know, just Google like commonly used passwords. And if your password is on that list, don't use it. But as far as I understand, have I been pwned is a legitimate thing. I mean, Princess, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's something that people use. I've used it before.
So Princess Young with the Department of Homeland Security?
Yeah, I think that there are wonderful resources out there. To Dan's point, looking at the list of commonly used passwords, the website you mentioned as well. But again, I do think that also opens the door, unfortunately, for websites that like to copycat. And so I would just say, at the end of the day, do your research and make sure that these websites look as legitimate as possible. I know that they're getting, like even the fake ones, are looking more and more authentic, unfortunately. But, you know, when in doubt, I like to go to websites like the Federal Trade Commission. I like reaching out to FBI. There's the Internet Cybersecurity Complaint Center that you can reach out to. And to me, like those are the types of resources I want to consider before going to some of those websites personally. But, you know, utilize the resources that are out there. Another one that I personally like is nomoreransom.org. And that actually, to your point, you mentioned kind of kidnapping computers, but also kidnapping that information through ransomware attacks. You can actually go to that website and get a few resources to hopefully help you unlock your computer before ever even needing to consider paying a ransom.
Okay, so
the resources out there are great. Just do your research first.
So haveibeenpwned.com, you know, but the thing is, you're going to a website, you're typing in your address, and they're going to tell you whether or not your email address has been somehow compromised or not, and that's not really actionable information. What are you going to do with that? But here you are, you're supplying your email address, and then you're setting up a relationship. You're the instigator of that, and basically you've signed up for all sorts of kinds of spam. Maybe this particular site is legitimate, but whenever you do something like this, you have become the product in someone else's ability to sell that email address, and we should be aware of that. I mean, am I wrong, Sean?
Absolutely, and one of the things I wanted to follow up on is absolutely. So I ran the identity theft and cyber squad for Secret Service in San Antonio for about 10 years. And so I would encourage people that unit still exists, you know, as well as the FBI, to call in and ask. I mean, those guys, particularly on the cyber squad or cyber side of things, you know, are up to, you know, they get a lot of information, they get a lot of briefings, they can give you some good tools and, you know, and kind of point you in the right direction. Hey, maybe this is something you shouldn't do or maybe this is. So those are some good resources. And most of the time, you know, that's part of our job as well, is to inform the public before they do become a victim. So, you know, you should get some good response from that. The second thing, and I kind of mentioned this, is that this is where it's a very delicate balance between what you put out there and what you don't. And it's kind of, in today's world, we constantly have to be doing that analysis. Do I want to give up this data, even though I'm trying to do it in a way that may benefit me? And that's where you sort of have to realize once you give it up is that it's now effectively in the hands of somebody else. And, you know, you constantly have to say, well, do I want these people to have it, even if it's for something beneficial for you? But know that once you hand it over, that, you know, it's kind of out of your control right now. for the most part. And, you know, that's, as a consumer, that's sometimes a very frustrating thing to sort of lose control of your data.
Now, we mentioned passwords just a second ago, and be aware of what some of the common passwords are. And it's interesting how connected to pop culture those common passwords are. And so I think that's something that people need to be aware of, that they shouldn't put in their, you know, their password shouldn't be Game of Thrones or something like that, because, you know, that's apparently that's a popular one that people will go to and try to think of something a little different. But with the new year, should we add go to new passwords? Should that be part of our new year ritual? Forget about the resolutions that you're not going to keep, but maybe changing all your passwords would actually be something, a benefit, Samantha Ellinger.
You know, there's been a lot of interesting discussion about passwords recently. NIST came out with revised cybersecurity guidelines around passwords, and one of the discussions was that having people periodically change their passwords usually doesn't add a whole lot to security, just in the sense that typically people are going to forget the new password that they made, or they're going to make such an insignificant change that it doesn't really actually make it more secure. So, for example, if my password is monkeys13 and I add one more number to it, it's not really going to make that much of a difference. And so what NIST has kind of come around to is the idea that really long passwords that are easy to type out and easy for you to remember are actually the best kind of policy. So instead of just arbitrarily changing your password every year, I do think the end of the year is a good time to kind of look over all of your passwords and kind of maybe examine if you need to kind of change some of them. If you have similar passwords for everything or the same password for everything, that's NIST will tell you that is a no-go. You should have a different password for everything, because the theory is if one of those passwords gets compromised, then all of them will, right? So, you know, that's something to think about. NIST has, like, great guidelines on passwords. I highly recommend going and checking it out. They have really good advice on what you should and shouldn't do. And NIST also says that people can use password managers. Again, that's something that you should be careful about and do your research on. I'm sure Princess can talk a little bit about that, but you know, you should think about kind of how do your research on a password manager before just arbitrarily giving a company all of your passwords.
Yes.
I think those are some good kind of rules of thumb around passwords.
Princess Young at the Department of Homeland Security, password managers. I read that the new Windows 10 password managers might be a vulnerability, and people should avoid using that.
Sure. You know, that one, along with all password managers, to Sam's point, doing your research is key. I will say that when folks ask us about, you know, is password manager in general a good idea, oftentimes we kind of get the advice that a password manager, an organization that offers that as a product, you know, they are either making their money or their mission is to keep the information that they're entrusted with safe. So, you know, generally, I think a password manager can be a really good idea, especially when you're responsible for a number of accounts, whether it's in the workplace or at home. So maybe, you know, try it at home with a few of your passwords that you need to get into pretty regularly, or actually probably more so infrequently, because those ones tend to be what we forget or what we make the simplest. But a password manager can be, you know, can be your good friend. And as I like to say, you know, they can even make a good Christmas present. It's right around the holidays. Why not? That one, along with external hard drives so you can back up your data, is a wonderful, wonderful gift that you can share. Cybersecurity makes a great gift.
What about, why not? What's wrong with writing down all my passwords on a piece of paper and keeping that in my wallet? And also, should I let my Chrome remember my passwords?
So, one of the very interesting things that we talk about is there's a lot of emphasis on cybersecurity. So to answer your question about writing it down, some of the research we've done at UT and what I've seen from my experience working these cases is about 50% of identity theft cases have nothing to do, that we come across, have nothing to do with a computer or very minimal computer exposure. So if you're walking around with your passwords written down in your wallet, in your car, somewhere at home, is still very vulnerable. We see a lot of physical theft of data still occurring, particularly through the mail. And so just because you have it in your wallet and somebody is not stealing it through, you know, not trying to get it out of from your computer doesn't mean that somebody else can't get it some other way. So I would say that, you know, guard your information in the physical form as well as in the digital form just as carefully, because you are still a lot of people out there going through dumpsters, breaking into houses, breaking into cars, stealing your mail, getting information that way. Second is, I typically do not let any browser let anybody save my password. That's just my own personal feeling on it. I'm very cautious about who I give that information out to. And I would concur, I generally think that a password manager is generally a good thing. And, you know, some of the things I always tell people on passwords is, you know, I typically use passwords that are a kind of a saying, and I use, you know, I may pull the first letter from each word. So I love to play basketball on Tuesday, is an example, and, you know, pulling the first letter from each word, and that being the password, and then some sort of special characters. So to answer those questions, definitely I would not advise writing it down if you can avoid it. If you do, it should be very secured, like valuables, your jewels, anything else, because, again, I do see that it happen a lot when people write that stuff down, and that information will fall into hands of someone that shouldn't have it.
And so Samantha Ellinger at Express News, if someone gets your password and they got you, but what, they basically have everything you have, they're going to drain your bank account? Is that what they do?
It depends a lot on, you know, the password to what account. I think, if your password gets stolen, if you think your account's been compromised, it's always really important to report it to the Federal Trade Commission, to your local authorities. If it's a credit card or like a bank account password or something like that, obviously you need to call your bank, try to get that password changed as soon as possible, get new credit card, new debit card issued, all that good stuff. Advice I saw online actually from US CERT that I thought was interesting was just kind of the idea, if you're making a purchase online, if you actually use your credit card instead of your debit card, it might be a little bit better for you in the long run, because if something bad happens to compromise your credit card, they're not directly draining money from your account the way a debit card would. So, and there's a lot of fraud protection on credit cards, so there's a better chance that it might get caught, you know, that kind of a thing. So, just some things to think about. I obviously, no matter how busy you are or how much you have going on during the holidays, if you think your account's been compromised, you need to call now. That is what the advice actually Princess gave me when we spoke on the phone a week or two ago, and she said that, you know, you really need to, the same way if a physical crime happens, the longer you wait, the harder it is to track down who did it. Same applies here in the case of a digital crime.
All right. So have you ever been hacked? Have you had your identity stolen? Do you see emails and social media that look pretty funky? We want to hear your stories. Do you have some worries about your data online? Do you mistakenly click on some link that suddenly now you're regretting? Give us a call. We want to hear from you. 210-614-8980, 614-8980. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We want to save you some potential future heartache by listening to our program. You might be able to hear something that's going to prevent you from making a fatal mistake online, where you could be hacked and have your identity stolen, or maybe you could give money away to some goofy guy across the world who isn't who you think it is. What's up with these online hacks? How can you protect yourself? The number is 210-614-8980. And we have Rhoda on the air. And Rhoda, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I am almost 78 years old. I've been using a computer, a personal computer, since 1984. And at that time, there was no internet. but there were bulletin boards. So there was always a need to be careful. One thing I never do is put my real birthday online. I have a specific online birthday, because with your birthday, people can find it easier to get your Social Security number. The second thing I do is I never say on Facebook, oh, I'm going out of town next week. Dumb idea. Okay, but now here's my solution to the password conundrum, and that is that I created years ago a Microsoft Word document with all of my passwords. This document is over 30 pages long because I keep adding to it. There are some places I never go anymore, but I have the passwords for what I need. Now, that's dangerous because here you have a document with all your passwords, but I coded them. So I gave hints to what they were. Okay, my favorite something or other, plus the number of kids that were in blah, 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 and nobody's going to know that but me.
All right, Rhoda, it sounds like you've got yourself a system there. Princess Young with the Department of Homeland Security, Cybersecurity, what do you think about Rhoda's tips?
Hi, Rhoda. You're a rock star. That is awesome. I think you need to share that information with those around you as well, because we like to say at the Department of Homeland Security, cybersecurity is a shared responsibility. So I love that you are sharing with us today, and then keep sharing those tips as well with your friends and family, no matter how old they are, because I think we just really need to have cybersecurity be a part of the conversation. And I think your tips are great. That you actually brought up one that I think is extremely important. I was going to bring up later about don't overshare. Don't let people know where you're going, because that also lets people know where you're not. And so if you say, going on vacation for 2 weeks, bye, you know, unfortunately, criminals are lurking all over the internet. So that was great advice to avoid telling people where you're going to be. In addition to that, you know, being careful where you check in. That's a very popular fad right now, to geotag your location. Again, cyber criminals love when you tell people where you are and where you're not, because they can easily kind of take advantage of that information. And then I think my only advice would be, I really like your clues that you gave within that password document. I would just say, though, at the end of the day, that is a lot of information in one document. And we like to say a lot of times that criminals love to paint a picture based on information that they can parse together through your different social media profiles. If someone was to hack into one account, they might have access to emails that would have some of this information. So my only suggestion would be maybe break up that document, diversify a little bit, and maybe, you know, have a couple documents. If it's your system and it works best for you, I'm not going to tell you that it's wrong or anything like that, but there are, you know, little tweaks that I think we can all make just to keep ourselves a little bit stronger. But congratulations. Those are great tips overall.
And so Princess Young, if I lying about my birth date, maybe if I started doing that now, even though I've been doing it, you know, the real birth date for years online, is that something I should be doing going forward? Does that really help?
I mean, I think we all want to be 21 forever, right?
Yes.
But no, I think Sean mentioned it earlier in the program. We have to be careful what information we're giving out, and we have to consider the value of that information. So, you know, if you are signing up for some sort of subscription, unfortunately, some of these organizations ask for those birth date information for their own purposes. You know, maybe you don't necessarily have to have the exact birth date, because you're kind of just going into a database. That is not to say you should definitely give proper information for, you know, healthcare systems or systems tied to banking and financial. We're definitely not, you know, promoting giving out false information by any means. But, you know, to Rhoda's point, I think you do have to take a look and see, you know, what information is being asked of me. And in some cases, I've actually just walked away from websites altogether and said, you know what, I really don't need that free item or that discounted item, because my information is not worth that in any capacity.
So Sean McCleskey with the UT Center for Identity and a former Secret Service agent, there's all sorts of self-surveillance things that are happening online. People are just ratting themselves out, and that information can be used against them. And I'm amazed at some of these quizzes that pop up in social media saying, which Beatle were you when you fill out all these questions, or are you a real genius? And the same thing, you know, and it seems like that's information that's going to be used against me as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that I always talk about is, you know, a number, particularly on financial accounts, you'll have what we call knowledge-based assessment questions. Well, they'll, you know, and a lot of different other organizations use them as well. But I always tell people, when you go and you, if you're given the opportunity to fill those in, and they typically will ask you, what street did you live on? What was your mother's maiden name? What high school did you go to? You know, go through and sort of figure out, okay, can I answer this question if I went online? And I have people do that, and it's what I do. Can I pick a couple of questions. Can I go online and find the answers to that? And if most of the time that you can, for example, you know, your mother's maiden name, that's very, you know, that's not very difficult to find out, Googling or doing a search online for somebody. You know, what is your high school mascot? That's not something very difficult to discover, particularly with social media websites, you know.
Yeah, especially when you know that the number one high school mascot is the Eagle.
Yep.
If you just type that in, you're likely going to be right.
Exactly. So I try to find questions that I still remember the answer to, but also that a lot of people don't know. One of the ones that I use, if it's available or if I can create it, is what was my first, what was the name of my first college roommate? Nobody really knows for the most part. And so my wife wouldn't even know the answer to that. Some other questions out there that would be just much more difficult to find if you sort of did your own self-query on your about yourself online and seeing what you can find. And I tell people, you know, it's a really good exercise to do. It takes a little bit of time, but I think it's well worth it. You know, kind of figure out what you can find about yourself, and then you know. And then again, you know, if somebody's asking you for specific information, do you really want to give that specific information? Is there any really need for them to have that? And again, once you do that, you're sort of putting that information out, and when it's out away from you, you're again losing control of that. And again, we've talked about social media. For us in law enforcement, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, because you know, if you're telling everybody where you're at and your habits, it's not a good thing. We also are able to make a lot of cases because people do that. One of the last cases I worked at Secret Service was a lot of it was done on Facebook, tracking individuals that I didn't know who they were until I found one person and then associated the rest of them on Facebook. And I was able to determine where the individual was going because he was telling us, you know, I'm going here. We would call that particular office and they would have a number of the counterfeit notes that he was passing. And I was able to track him across the country doing that. So it can be a very valuable tool. But it's also, you've got to recognize the risks and the dangers of that.
Another caller, John, is here. And John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
I just wanted to kind of give a little word of warning about checking your mail. A few years ago, I got a piece of mail from Capital One, and I don't have a Capital One card.
Do you mean email or snail mail?
It's physical mail.
Okay.
And I was going to throw it away, but I opened it and I found out it was a collection notice saying, hey, you have a past due amount on your bill. And so I called them up and it turned out that, I believe it was a U.S. postal worker had applied for a card in my name and then intercepted it at my mailbox and activated it in my name and charged a couple thousand dollars. And so, you know, it's just something that, you know, maybe take a look at that junk mail before you throw it out, you know, to see if it looks like it's a promotion or if it's a sort of official notice.
Wow. Were you on the hook for that money?
No, I was able to eventually get out of it. It took better part of probably 6 months. So, you know, of police reports and filing claims with, the credit tracking agencies, that sort of thing. But I did eventually get it taken care of. But, if I could do it all over again, I'd rather not.
Yeah, I don't blame you, John. Thanks for the call. So Princess Young at the Department of Homeland Security, that's kind of a scary story.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. My mouth was wide open while John was telling that story. A plus to John for, you know, looking and seeing that something seemed a little bit off. And so he did more research and ended up finding out, unfortunately, that this had happened. My only additional piece of advice to what he said was also ensure that you're shredding those kinds of documents, you know, after you get your mail and you review them, even if it's that, you know, the ever-loved junk mail, that has your address and that has your information on it. And some criminals, cyber criminals, actually start at the physical level and do what some people know as dumpster diving. So they're able to, again, put that picture of you together that has your address, possibly that has, again, some of those data points that Sean was talking about that could go into password retrieval, et cetera. So I'm a huge proponent of shredding those documents, marking them out with permanent markers, as well as even my friends. Like, this is a season where everyone's getting holiday cards. I like to be a good friend, and I like to mark out my information and their information. And finally, even luggage tags.
Wow.
Luggage tags, hotel cards, those all have some pretty interesting information that criminals would love to utilize.
All right, so we're going to take a break here. So put that on the list. Get someone a shredder for Christmas. The phone lines are open, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're talking about the do's and don'ts of cybersecurity as you do your online shopping. A lot of people are making that last big push, trying to get that same-day delivery or even quicker for Christmas time. And the number to call in with your stories, your questions, 210-614-8980. And Mike is on the line. And Mike, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm curious about using those rechargeable credit cards, if you should use that instead of your banking cards. What do you think?
That's a good question, Mike. Thanks for the question. So Princess Young, Department of Homeland Security, cybersecurity expert.
Hi. So my colleagues might have a better answer for this, honestly. Sam mentioned it earlier during the show, but I personally kind of use the credit card options during the holidays, and that's a tip that we provide to a lot of people through our US CERT team as well, just because you're able to track the activity that's going on, and if there's any purchases in question, you have a little bit of a security so you don't lose that information. I don't think those rechargeable cards are terrible. I don't know a lot about them, just being completely honest. I would continue to utilize your normal banking cards, but, you know, during the season, if you get one as an example as a gift or something, you know, totally use it. But I still like having kind of the backing behind some financial institutions. Sean or Sam, if you have anything.
Yeah, Samantha Ellinger, San Antonio Express News.
I'm not as familiar with the rechargeable cards, but I think the advice that Princess gave was probably the best, just from what I've seen from, you know, looking at guidelines from CERT and from talking to people in the industry. I think that, usually you'll notice if you use, you know, say pending for a little bit, so that gives you a great window. During the holidays, I think it's important to check your bank statements more often potentially than you normally would.
Okay, and Sean,
that it's good to be checking your bank statements regularly. That way you can see if there were any charges that you didn't anticipate.
Sean McCleskey at the UT Center for Identity. Prepaid cards.
I would absolutely say that if you're going and doing shopping online, use your credit card. Particularly now, a lot of organizations, they have really good systems that kind of track your patterns of behavior. So if they see something that's out of whack or it's in a location that you normally are not there, it's really good, and they will notify you of that. And so I think that I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with rechargeable, but as far as if you're out there doing a lot of, you know, purchasing, particularly online, I would use my credit card.
And I know that a debit card does not have the same protections that an actual credit card has. Can you talk about the differences between those, Sean?
So So the problem with your debit card is obviously those funds are coming out of your account immediately. And so getting them, if that card is compromised, then you're now having to, notify the bank, and then you're going to have to fill out your fraud affidavits, and it may take a few, days or so to get that money back into your account. Whereas a credit card, it's obviously you're not going to be facing that same issue that you're actually out the money right there. Plus, it's just, again, a debit card is much more sensitive information. You have a lot of things tied into your bank account. And so I just find that I personally right now use my debit card is really an ATM card. I don't use it really at all anymore, except in order to get cash, just because, again, it's a much more sensitive number. And a lot of people don't realize if you're not watching, if you're not checking your bank statements, and all of a sudden you're the victim of fraud, after a certain period of time, you may not be able to get that money, refunded, because the onus is upon you to some degree to make sure you're checking and to report that fraud. So institutions have different requirements about how fast you need to, call in and let them know that, in fact, you've been the victim of fraud. And so I've seen a number of, cases where people just were not noticing, particularly if those charges were small in amounts. And then after a while, the institution saying, hey, you didn't notify us in a timely manner. So that's why, again, I think the credit card is just such a better way to do online shopping and really to kind of use one if you're doing a bunch of online shopping so you can keep better track of it.
Okay, here's another caller, and this is Nikki. Nikki, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, I noticed you're advising people to put, like, obscure things into your password hint boxes on your webpage security call. And what I do and what I'd recommend people to do is just to put random characters in there and write it down in a secured password book, because it seems to me that once the person makes a mistake with your password, they'll be asked for the hint. And then, as you said, they will try and Google it up.
Okay. Nikki, thank you for that recommendation. And is that Jake to you, Samantha, over at Express News?
I've never thought about that before, but it sounds like something that would work. I mean, going back to the discussion earlier on, should you have a password manager, should you not, that's something that you could probably save into your password manager if you had one. So I think, Nikki, that's kind of a creative thing to do, and potentially something that, I mean, going back to the whole password hint issue, something that I was going to say to younger people who may be listening in, I know for me personally, most of the things that are in the password hints you can find out from my social media accounts. And I think that I always try to pick one that I know is something that I don't post about on social media or that I don't talk about on Twitter, Instagram, or something like that. So that's something that maybe the random character is a good solution if you are someone who typically has a lot of information online already.
So this is also the season for phishing online, and I'm getting a lot of emails from these big box retailers. It's not really from them, but they say they're from them, saying I have a $50 coupon for this, that, and the other thing. And I don't believe it. And Amazon's also telling me the same thing. So Princess Young over the Department of Homeland Security, is that a scam?
It very well could be. I'm not going to say that.
I mean, they're not going to be giving me money. Why would they be giving me money?
I know. That goes back to that kind of saying, if it's too good to be true, it very well might be. It probably is. So I kind of like your caution. It's that trust but verify situation. We mentioned it earlier throughout the chat. I think, calling those organizations, verifying that these emails are legitimate. And unfortunately, I've heard stories that sometimes those emails even come with phone numbers. So then people call that phone number. And of course, that might be likely tied to the criminal as well. So, go and get the legitimate phone number. Contact either your bank or the organization offering a freebie. It is a season of good deals. I mean, so there might be those times where the good deal is legitimate because they're also trying to get you to send more money or they want your business. And so they're going to offer those deals. But it goes back to that homage. Like, if it's too good to be true, or when in doubt, maybe throw it out, because it also, it may be a discount or a freebie, but you have to give information or you have to click on a link. And as we've been saying throughout this entire hour, you know, how much is your data worth to you? And, you know, is it worth it to click on the link or to enter in that information?
So
when in doubt, you know, hover over those links. Again, verify that those email addresses look legitimate. If there's glaring errors, you know, of the English language in these emails, those are signs. Normally an organization is going to have a pretty good vetting process before they send out these types of emails. So if it looks suspicious, it very well could be.
The security tab that's on some websites, if I'm like on Amazon or something, that's important. That does mean something, Sean McCleskey?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, again, and you know, it's take the time to look at the individual sites. Like I feel very comfortable, you know, using Amazon, for example, and using PayPal. You know, does that mean it's going to be 100% secure? You know, I don't know if there's anything 100%, but I feel fairly confident. So I and one of the things I also do when I'm shopping online is a lot of times I will actually, if you can register an account, I typically will register an account and password protected as opposed to just kind of being a one-time shopper. And I tend to feel like your information is going to be a little bit more protected like that. But again, I know that I'm handing my information out. That's why I use one credit card, and that's why I do a little bit of research on the organization or the company that I'm purchasing from.
And Samantha, one more question for Samantha Ellinger at Express News. I mean, these thieves are targeting you all along this chain from the minute you go online until when your package arrives on your porch and sits there throughout the day. Are you hearing about people really are losing their packages to porch thieves here in San Antonio?
You know, that's not something that I have done much reporting on. I have heard more about the phishing attacks and the phishing attempts of you get an email for a deal. And what I was just going to say, hearkening back to the discussion earlier, was, you know, if you get an email that says it claims it's from, I don't know, JCPenney, and it says you get a 40% off if you click this link, instead go into your search bar and type in JCPenney and pull it up. If it's a real sale, to be on the JCPenney website already, you don't need to click through a link in an email. I just always do that. Actual packages being stolen is not something I'm as familiar with, but the phishing attacks from people that I've talked to in the industry is definitely something that people are experiencing right now.
Yeah, well, I'm hearing stories about packages disappearing off people's porches all the time. Maybe if you reach out to your neighbors, and you can talk to them and help you cover your porch and protect yourself. I want to thank Samantha Ellinger with the San Antonio Express News. She's their technology reporter. We also heard from Princess Young with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Office of Cybersecurity and Communications, and Sean McCleskey. He's a retired Secret Service agent, and he is the Director of Organizational Education and Measurement at the University of Texas at Austin Center for Identity. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you so much for tuning in and safe online shopping.